Tonight, as you no doubt noticed, we concluded the reading of the book of Exodus. That's where we said, Hazak, Hazak, Nitzhazek. It's a traditional blessing. It's the reminder that we use when we conclude the reading of a book of Torah. Now, considering this book that we concluded, the book of Exodus is a most interesting book. It begins with the listing of those who entered Egypt, and therefore it's called Shemot, names. It's the listing of the names of some of the 70 who joined Joseph there with him in Egypt. And then we have the story of Moses, which in turn leads into the story of the Passover. And it's appropriate that we've concluded Exodus just before the month of Nisan, the month of Passover, begins. And then we also have the Exodus itself and the absolutely amazing miracles that produced and accompanied the Exodus. In fact, we're reminded in the text, wonders like these have never been done before in any nation in all the world throughout the whole of history. Well said. You know who did say that, by the way? It was God himself who said that. So, of course, it's well said. Stick with me. And then we have that astounding and awesome encounter with God at Sinai, the mountain, including God speaking directly to the people and the Zechanim, the elders, actually sharing a covenant meal personally with the great king. In addition, there are the detailed instructions for the Mishkan, and then the actual building of the Mishkan, the tabernacle, which in this context is our honeymoon home with the God of the universe. At this point, we should be saying, wow, what a book! But then we should also be suggesting to ourselves, but what was it all about anyway? What is the book of Exodus about? Well, at first glance, the answer seems rather easy. As the English title says, it tells the story of the Exodus from Egypt, the story of how God supernaturally rescued the Israelites from slavery by defeating Pharaoh and his armies and delivering them from him. Let me suggest the second glance, however, shows that that answer cannot be right. What? Horrors. Well, you see, the book has 40 chapters, but the story of the Exodus from Egypt concludes in chapter 15, well before the halfway point. And then the next 9 chapters describe the first few months of the nation's walk through the desert with their God as they go towards the promised land, focusing on that amazing revelation at Sinai. And then the remaining chapters center on the tabernacle or the Mishkan. So the amount of space the book devotes to the tabernacle is as long as the amount of space that is devoted to the story of the Exodus. The book of the tabernacle, Sefer Mishkan, therefore, would be as justified a title for this book as the book of Exodus. On the other hand, the most accurate title might well be the book of the Exodus, the revelation at Sinai, the tabernacle, and some other stuff. By the way, our sages in Talmudic times astutely avoided this whole problem by naming each book of the Torah after its first significant word, so that they simply called Exodus Sefer Shemot, the Book of Names. Now, given this diversity of topics or the diverse nature of these topics covered in the book, we might well begin to wonder whether any topic actually holds the book together as one thematic unit. Is Sefer Shemot really then a book at all? Or is it a somewhat random collection of material? All of it important, but not really adding up to a unified whole. This question becomes even more acute when we realize that the book seems to end in mid-sentence. Not in any translation, but in the original text. You see, the first word of the book of Leviticus, which begins immediately thereafter, is Vayikra. It's a verb form used to continue a sequence of events within a sentence. It's not a verb that normally begins a sentence. Now, the last words or verses of Exodus tell us that God's presence, or what's called the kavod, the glory of God, that amazing display of His magnificence, as you heard it read, covered the tabernacle, as He quite clearly took up residence in the Holy of Holies. The first verse of Leviticus then goes on to tell us that God called to Moses from that same Holy of Holies. All of this might prompt the question, are the divisions among the five books of the Torah significant, or might they just simply reflect some ancient scribal convention from a time when it was just more convenient to write the Torah on smaller scrolls than we use today? And some have posited that. Well, the Parsha from 2 weeks ago, Tetzaveh, provides a somewhat surprising answer to all these questions, I would suggest. That Parsha informs us of the purpose of the tabernacle and also of the purpose of the Exodus, thus linking the first and the last parts of the book. Here's what we read in Exodus 29, verses 42 to 46. God here speaks of the tabernacle, and He says, "There I shall meet with you, and there I shall talk to you. I shall live among the children of Israel as their God, and they will know that I, the Lord, am their God." In the Hebrew text, that's often pronounced Adonai. "I am the Lord, their God, who brought them out of the land of Egypt so that I might live among them. I, the Lord, am their God." Whoa, you should be saying. Brought us out of Egypt so that He can live among us? Oh, by the way, there are hints of this very same thing reflected in an amazing prophecy, Isaiah 7:14, where the one who's going to be born in that special way is called Emmanuel, literally God with us. Which is why the opening chapter of Yochanan's Gospel, John chapter 1 and its prologue, describes that very process where God walks, lives and walks among His people yet again. Now this passage from Exodus 29 not only tells us that the purpose of the tabernacle is for God to move in among the Israelites, it also tells us that the construction of that tabernacle was the very purpose of the liberation from slavery itself. Here again the words, "I brought them out of the land of Egypt so that I might live among them." Amazing. God liberated Israel so that He would have a personal, tangible relationship to a group of humans. That group would then follow highly specific rules to build a structure that would accomplish something quite paradoxical. It would allow the God who's often described as transcendent, a being who by definition stands beyond the world He created, it would allow Him to literally become immanent, namely actually present in His world. Don't try to take that in, that'll blow your mind apart. Or at least it should. And so the appropriate response again is simply, wow. Additionally, in the 1100s, the great Rabbi Ibn Ezra commented that while Moses was on Mount Sinai, God commanded him concerning the tabernacle that it would be, hear it, a permanent place among the people for the very same glory that had rested on the mountain. What you saw at Sinai, he points out, is what you get to experience in the Mishkan and then later the temple. Friends, that's radical. Exodus, then, is the story of a transcendent God who deeply yearns to be more fully experienced as immanent. The Lord goes beyond the world and remains completely different from what is in the world, but the Lord nevertheless wants to be truly near the creatures He created. Let that sink in. The liberation from Egypt, then, was part of a much larger plan. It was the vehicle for God to come into the world and live among humanity and move about among them. Remember the text from Leviticus? God says, I will live, verse 11 and 12, I will live among you, and I will walk among you, and be your God, and you shall be my people. Think with me, gang. What's that a reflection on? Or about? When God literally walked with his creatures. Adam and Eve in the garden. Wow. Now, please remember that Exodus and Leviticus are connected. So this text from Leviticus helps us understand what goes on at the end of the book of Exodus. Now, that's awesomely good news. And let me suggest we can all use good news nowadays. As Shlomo's very pertinent observation astutely reminded us, you might say, Shlomo? Who's Shlomo? Bear with me. Shlomo was sitting in a Starbucks in Israel reading an Arab newspaper. His friend Moshe said, have you lost your mind? Now, I know he wouldn't have said it in English, but that's okay. Why are you reading an Arab newspaper? To which Shlomo replied, I used to read the Jewish newspapers. But what did I find? Jews being persecuted. Israel being attacked and blamed. Jews disappearing through assimilation. Jews living in poverty. So I switched to an Arab newspaper. And now what do I find? We Jews own all the banks. We control the media. Jews are all rich and powerful. Jews rule the world. Their news is just so much better. Well, back to our good news from this text. The news that the purpose of the Exodus and the Passover was so that God could actually move into our neighborhood. Welcome, Mr. Rogers. Thank you for those who remember that far back. And please also remember that the word for the tabernacle in Hebrew is Mishkan. Now, the word Mishkan shares the same root as Shacham, the verb to live among. And this same root is also used in the word Shekhinah, God's palpable, real presence. And so, through the building of the Mishkan, God is revealing to us that his presence was not just some mystical concept, but was an earthy, tangible reality that you could almost reach out and touch. Oh, and by the way, we get to reflect that reality. So this is the story of the book of Exodus that the book wants to tell. Not just of liberation, but of liberation that makes God's presence possible and palpable. By the way, it's a presence that our dear friend Judy has gotten to experience even more greatly. Oh, this is a thought that occurred to me, so let me step out of the story for just a second. This is the first service that she has shared with us by looking down on what is going on as she has joined us. Anyhow, back to our story, the story of the book of Exodus. I'm sorry, that popped into my mind. Okay, the main theme then of this book, Sefer Shemot, is God's desire to be present on planet Earth. And once God's glory or magnificence enters the tabernacle at the end of Exodus chapter 40, the book literally stops in awe, even though in the middle of a sentence. The story of the liberation from slavery is therefore simply a prologue to this much more important theme. It turns out then that the book does hang together as a unity, and the best title for it therefore might be The Book of God's Presence. Sefer Shekhinah. God wanted human beings to be actively hands-on involved in this enterprise by making him a home and by making him feel at home in it. However, this text also has clear instructions for how this is to be done and who qualifies to do it, which is very important stuff, I would suggest, for us to understand as well. And they're also found in our parasha. The text says, and Moses said to the children of Israel, See, the Lord has called by name Bezalel, son of Uri, son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah, and he has filled him with the Ruach Hashem, the Spirit of God, in wisdom and understanding and knowledge and in all manner of workmanship. Now, I want you to notice very clearly here in this very simple text, it's not just Bezalel as Bezalel, but Bezalel filled with the Spirit of God, who is essential to the project. The first thing he's called to is not the work itself, but becoming filled with the Spirit. Before he becomes an agent for transforming mundane materials into the holy place, he must be transformed in a holy process himself. And the book we've been unwrapping over the last several weeks, Ephesians, deals with that in chapter 5. But for that, you'll have to wait as it describes that process. So we can see from this text, individual calling and individual infilling are essential to the grand communal plan. But there's more. Despite Bezalel's greatness, God does not call him alone. He raises up Aholiab at the same time. Aholiab is from the least of the tribes, Dan, while Bezalel is from the greatest, Judah. So, the sages in the Midrash explain it this way. God said, let him, Dan, come and be associated with him, Judah, so that no one may despise him or become arrogant. For both the great and the small are equal in God's sight. Bezalel comes of the tribe of Judah, and Aholiab from Dan, yet the latter is associated with him. And so Rabbi Chanina said, the great and the small are equal, and no one should ignore his help. End quote. So we all, whether great or small, get to be involved in the grand plan. If we qualify, as we all anticipate the future culmination of Sefer Shekhinah. And how do we qualify? Well, I'm glad you asked. The Haftarah for this week answers that question. It's Ezekiel chapter 36, verses 25 to 27. God said, I will place my Spirit within you and enable you to walk according to my guidelines, giving you a new heart and therefore a new spirit. That'll be unwrapped, as I said, by the rabbi in Ephesians chapter 5. Now, as we look forward and work towards this, we've got a great promise. It's the promise that Jenny reminded us of as she read at the end of the book. Ke'anan Adonai al Mishkan Yomam. Ve'et tiyeh laila bo. Ve'kol me'asehem. And so the glory of God was there by day, the fire by night, throughout all their journeys. It's a fulfillment of the promise he made. I am the God who will go with you wherever you go. And he said earlier, and I will give you rest. That's what it's all about. Take a minute or so to reflect and begin your response in quiet.